Guru Nation, welcome to episode 797 of Random Musings from the Clinical Trials Guru. In this episode, I actually go live and talk to Robert Goldman, who spent the last almost 2 decades at CRO and sponsor levels. And we talk about resumes on the gap, or sorry, gaps on the resume and gaps on your CV. So is it normal? Is it bad? Is it good? Like the spectrum of opinions on this topic are all over the place. And then my business partner, Chris Sauber, also joins. So it's two site owners and a CRO and sponsor, career-long executive discuss. Really quick shout outs to our sponsors. Thank you to Anato. It's a place to get studies. I just had a site selection visit today. Thanks to Anato. Looks like we'll get the study. It's free. They don't get involved in the contract and budget. They don't get involved in regulatory. It's literally just trying to position the best sites with sponsors for free. That's it. They make all their money from the sponsors, by the way. So definitely cool for sites. Also, another sponsor of the show, Creo, eSource, eReg, CTMS, financials. I remember I have to send an invoice. Actually, I'm going to do it right now. After I record this intro, it's going to take me 5 minutes because of Creo. You pay for what you use, and that's it. And it's got so many other cool features too. It has text messages to patients. I mean, it really is like end to end what you need to run your site. Check out Creo. Link to both of these in the show notes, as well as Robert Goldman. Enjoy the show. We got an interesting live stream because last week, Robert, you tagged me on a post. I'm trying to actually find it, but it's about gaps in resumes. And do you want to like introduce the problem or the situation? Because there's like arguments over this. I never realized that this is a thing. Like,
I mean, I think there's a lot to talk about. So I think we can break it down and we'll unpack it as gently as possible here. But it's no secret. Obviously, you and Chris being at the site level probably aren't seeing what people who are at sponsor vendors and CROs are seeing, and especially the employees who have been impacted by reductions in forces, which are AKA layoffs, just straight getting fired. There's a tremendous shift in paradigm. I mean, CEOs are stepping aside for new CEOs that are coming in that are fairly young. Is that a flag? Is it a sign? I mean, I don't know. I'd say so. I mean, you guys can, I don't want to mention any companies particularly, but it's no secret. These announcements were made public, as early as last week. So, I think just with the amount of talent that's out there right now, it makes it very difficult in terms of competitive advantage to where the job market seeker who's looking for a sponsor level job, a CRO job, a vendor level job. And I'm not talking so much about the high attrition rate jobs. I'm talking about the director level and higher jobs, even PM and higher. We can, use that as a benchmark. More and more people are inherently going to, whether they want to or not, have a gap in their resume, Not because it's a mental health break or a family break or they had a child, but because they were simply just laid off in this crazy job market that we're in right now. So a lot of people are taking the position, in the post that I tagged you on, Dan, that sparked this sparked, I should say, this conversation point was that, companies should at least start to get used to seeing gaps in resumes. Not because it's the candidate who wants to see that. And some take a position like, hey, if you don't see a gap, that's a red flag. And some say, well, if you see a gap, it is a red flag. So that's what we need to discuss. And I think that we need to normalize as an industry, and recruiters need to get trained much better, whether they're internal recruiters, whether they're executive headhunters, whether they're agencies. I think we need to normalize that if you see a gap between 20, starting end of 2022 through 2023, even up to present, you know, don't write that candidate off because there's a gap in their resume. And a lot of the old school way of thinking is you just do write that person off, right? So a lot of talented people, a lot of
how long are the gaps we're talking about? Like, indefinite?
I mean, Dan, I mean, I wouldn't say indefinite, but I mean, I know people that have been unemployed 11 to 15 months. Mm-hmm. Some people are PhD holders, you know, and they just can't, and you know, I had a conversation with a very respected colleague of mine, 30 years in this industry as of January. He's been at, you know, very executive level positions. And he told me that he's literally considering leaving the industry. You know, he's thinking about taking his transferable skills and just hanging his hat up. He's like, I was blessed to be part of this for 30 years. But he's like, I can't imagine. He's been so far removed from day-to-day operations that he could never see himself going back to a director or project manager role. You know what I mean? So to hear him say that was really unsettling. And I'm like, you know, this is just a topic. I'd love for the audience to chime in and give their sentiment. Obviously, I think this, we're going to need more than one episode to really, you know, dive on in this. But I think we need to really discuss and normalize the fact that people get placed in situations where they may have to resign because they have no other choice, or they get laid off, or they get fired, not because of their performance, but because CROs or sponsors or vendors made poor hiring decisions and overhired, and now have left this tremendous talent pool out there. And there's just not enough jobs at the moment to fill all the people who need them. I'll leave it at that.
So I would start by saying, I think small gaps, and obviously smaller, is easier to hide, right? So if you have a month, say, that there's a time you're unemployed because you got laid off and you got a job right away. If you put just the months of employment, right, it would look like there was no gap on your CV, right? So if you got laid off in March and you had a job in April, right, through March at this one company, April and on, then you just have to explain what's the change in companies due to. It's the longer gaps that are, can be problematic. And I agree, definitely that employers of past cared about employment gaps more so than non-gaps. I've never heard of a problem with a non-gap, right?
Because they'll at least ask about the gaps, right? Like even I ask if we interview a coordinator. One thing I never understood, and maybe it's like your friend as well, you know, if you know you're going to have a gap, like let's say it's been a month, 2 months, you're in between jobs, like, and you have that much experience, like even 5 years, why not just go self-employed consultant? Like even if you're trying to get consulting gigs, I mean, that takes care of the gap right there.
It does, Dan. But, you know, also I think.
What's worse, like having a gap or being an entrepreneur?
No, I think you're right, 100%. But it's a matter of, you know, let's just play devil's advocate for a second. So, yes, you're absolutely right. You know, you have this, you know, entrepreneurial spirit, and you want to start a consultancy, but you know, some people have it's not easy to secure long term work or even any work as a consultant because there's so many consultants out there, right? Mm-hmm. So you really need to lean on your network to establish or land one of those. But I say this to say that what's worse here in this situation, you start an LLC and then an employer says, do you have any references that I can contact that you work for myself.
I'm a good reference.
they would want like a client.
So like, yeah, like a client, like, you know, what is a client you represented during your consultancy? And then if you don't have any, it's like, okay, so you are a consultant, but you didn't consult. So yeah. I'm just saying, you know, now if you are a consultant and you have 2-3 companies that can provide a reference, yes, I was engaged with this person from, you know, this time to this time, and they delivered services on whatever, and you're broadening your horizons. You're not, you know, yes, then you're right. There's no harm in that, but you know, it's not just an easy, quick fix. And I also want to Chris's point, say that, you know, I think anybody watching this right now would agree who's in the job market, you know, having ending your job in March and finding a new job in April is very unlikely, right? So that's my whole point here, is saying that employers like you, Dan, employers like you, Chris, and those who may be watching, CEOs, hiring managers, HRs, like, I think everybody should start getting used to not passing over a candidate or even asking a candidate. You can ask, but I wouldn't like hone in and spend so much time like you would historically on why there's a gap in this person's CV. And unfortunately, with these unprecedented times that we're seeing and the pullback in work, the delay in the start of work that impact vendors, everybody else, CROs, sponsors due to funding, whatever, that we don't drill these candidates over a gap in their resume. I just think it needs to kind of be normalized to a sense.
So true or not, there's one for longer term gaps, say a year or 2 years. You can always put homemaker, right? Now, the question I have is, does that equally apply for male or female, or is that just a female, you know, I guess, excuse?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, you know, that's a whole can of worms. I mean, right? I obviously, it should apply both ways, right?
Yeah, but does it? Well, put you on the spot.
I mean, I don't my personal opinion is I don't think it does work both ways.
Yeah,
but it should work both ways, right?
Agreed, but I don't think it does.
Yep, I agree. And you know, like Chris, look, the last pod we talked about ageism, you know, we talked about that as a thing, and there's a lot of things that are kind of not applied equally. And I think you make a great point, you know. I mean, it should be acceptable, but unfortunately, I don't think it is.
So a female comes in, say, late 20s, early 30s. I'm just giving an approximation in age. But, you know, they have homemaker on their CV for 3 years. I wouldn't take issue with that.
I wouldn't either.
I don't think any of us would. But
then, Dan, what if Robert Goldman comes in to your clinic looking for a job, and I have homemaker on my resume for 3 years? How do you feel about that? We're gonna put Dan on the spot now, Chris.
You're trying to get me canceled.
No.
We already discussed this.
You were gone. I had a
phone call. I got a contact for Robert on that phone call.
Oh, good.
I don't know if it's good or bad though.
Chris just made me answer, put me on the spot. So now you kind of it's trickling down to you. I come in, I have 3 years of, and I'm a homemaker, Dan.
I would say you and your wife just had a child, and she's probably making more than you, and so you guys decided you're going to stay home. I don't think I'd necessarily have a problem with that. I mean, it's the same argument as the female.
But is it the exact same argument? Because both Robert and I felt that it wouldn't be deemed the same.
Well, we have many households now where the females make more than the men.
Sure.
So it's going to be increasingly common.
I think, like, you know, not to interrupt you, like Chris and I were talking, so we both agree what the answer should be. But
I think everyone agrees. Like HR manual, page number 67, paragraph 2 says this.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I got a more, that one's okay. Like, it's the same thing. I mean, you can explain it. If you can explain it, just like everything else in research, if you can justify why and it makes sense. And by the way, you can't prove any of this stuff. Like, someone can have a huge gap on their resume and say, I spent time raising kids, when in actuality, they never had kids. Like, how are you going to prove it? You're going to call the kid? Reference check? You don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they can just say that and
might have been in prison.
Well, that you're supposed to check. But I got a worse one. Well, not a worse one. I got one that's tough to answer for me too. I'm not sure I have an answer. This is why I was asking you, is it worse to be an entrepreneur on your resume than have a gap? Because I know a lot of small businesses, and a lot of big ones too, they don't like to see self-employed. They don't want people to necessarily be free thinkers. They want to hire people that can color within the lines and do the job and not in 6 months from now get bored and try to start their own company again. Dan's like there is this unspoken rule. There's this unspoken rule that entrepreneurs don't make good employees. I wouldn't make a good employee, I don't think. I'd make it for like a year if I had to, but after that, I'm looking for ways to get out. And as me as an entrepreneur, I know that. So when I'm interviewing people, I'm like, that's naturally like something in the back of my head. And we do have one employee who is a coordinator that is exactly like me. Her name's Lana. And as long as she convinces me somehow that she's going to stay, this is where it becomes a selling and a persuasion thing for the interview. But how, like, I know a lot of CROs that don't like to see self-employed on their resume. It's just probably another unspoken truth. What do you guys think about that? Like, would you hire for the biotech? Or let's say you worked, forget the biotech, because you can argue the entrepreneurial spirit. Let's say you worked back at your CRO, one of the big ones you worked at, and you're a hiring manager. Would you hire a failed entrepreneur or a serial entrepreneur with a bunch of different roles on their resume?
It would, you know, I mean, how would I mean, it's tough, Dan. I mean, I hear you because I actually had a bunch of candidates when, you know, when I was in a position to hire for my current company. And you wouldn't believe how many candidates came over. We were looking for a CTM at the time. And so many had exactly what you just described, you know, four or five really no name, non-existent companies. And, you know, being unable to, you know, you even go to their state website and look at their Secretary of State and just try to see, is this a real LLC? Like, yeah. Start there, right? And like these names were not coming up. So to answer this, like, it's very difficult because I wouldn't pass over anybody. Like, I think everybody's worth a discussion, but then again, that's not realistic. You can't have a discussion with 1,000 people.
Right. You can have a discussion, but then you still got to decide.
But the problem is, Dan, is, you know, am I going to have a discussion with that person, or there's 50 to 100 to 1,000 other applicants exactly. that don't have this problem?
Exactly. You know? So back to my original, what's better, like a gap or like a failed entrepreneurial stint? I don't know. I don't know if I have the right answer. And every hiring manager is different. I think every company is different when it comes to who they're looking for.
I think right now is a very different time. I think right now, because there's so many available qualified candidates to fill almost any role you could think of. I'm not talking just operations, Dan. I'm talking CMC, GMP, GLP. Like, I'm talking commercialization. Like, I'm not just talking, like, you know, I'm talking every role. There are such well qualified, not only by experience, but credentialed candidates out there that are open to work. I mean, just look at LinkedIn. It's clear as day. So I think right now that would present a problem, because there's such a rich talent pool. However, if we go like, you know, 3 months post, you know, COVID, where everybody's going remote and we got all this shift in focus and we got to go on this crazy hiring spree, then maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But like right now in 2024, as we're sitting here, I think that's a big problem. And I don't agree with it. Let me just say that. I don't think it. But we also need to talk, you know, reality here. And that's why I really wanted to have this discussion, because, you know, there's a lot of great people that I talk to that, you know, reach out on LinkedIn and we have discussions. And it's like my heart breaks for these folks, because they're passionate, they're smart, they're ambitious, they're not being lazy, they want to work.
Yeah.
There's just nothing available for them.
There is and there isn't. Okay, like the phone's ringing constantly. I have this GMP project for you. I'll talk to you about after.
Okay.
There's jobs. There's maybe not jobs at all times. Like maybe at CRO and sponsors, like hiring freeze. but there's opportunities everywhere. And this is where, like, it comes back to maybe you take a chance to be a contractor or be a consultant. And there's a difference between a serial entrepreneur and a consultant in the eyes of an employer.
So sorry. So first off, I got to correct a mistake. I said Rothschild. It wasn't Rothschild. It was Rockefeller, John D. Rockefeller.
The Rothschilds own like the banking system. I don't know what you were trying to get at, but I was rolling with it.
So to get back to your just last statement was, supposedly John D. Rockefeller went to Prussia, copied their educational system to train workers not to think for themselves.
Okay, there you go.
Because they don't want free thinkers. They don't want you creating your own businesses.
Right.
They want you to stay in line and just work. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what they want. So, kind of a conspiracy.
And I don't agree with that personally. Like, I've hired entrepreneurial types and it's worked well. I've also hired entrepreneurial types. It hasn't worked well, but I know for a fact, anecdotally, so maybe not a fact, CROs don't like this. They don't like to see this. I was a owner of ABC LLC between this year and this year, and then another LLC between this year and this year, even if they're research related. Now, if you were a contract CRA, that's different, but you're not going to put random LLC names. You're just going to put contract CRA, and you're going to list which clients were your clients, right? That's acceptable, even though that's basically an entrepreneur, more or less.
Sure, sure.
It's a risky thing to go from leaving the workforce and become an entrepreneur. It's slightly less risky to leave and become a contractor or a consultant, because you can always come back to, well, it's not an entrepreneur. This was just a contractor, consultant. That's more acceptable in a lot of these hiring managers' eyes than I was an entrepreneur. I went to go start this tech company, unless you're going to get hired by a tech company. But if we're talking traditional, like site CRO sponsor, they don't necessarily want to see that. They want to see, what have you done within our realm that is transferable to us? That's what they want to see. So it's tough. I mean, but there are opportunities out there, but it's risky because, I mean, what are you going to do? Just sit around and keep waiting? Or if an opportunity comes, but it's not a W-2, let's say it's even just all commission-based or all like spec work, I would still rather do that than have a gap on my resume. That's just personal.
Just philosophy. Just to verify what Dan's saying, we had this conversation probably not quite a decade ago, but close. Dan said he'd rather drive Uber than work for somebody because he's working for himself.
I think so.
That's what you said at the time.
I think I would still, unless you give me like a C-suite. I mean, come on. You give me like a biotech exec. Come on. I'm not driving for Uber. But if you like CRA or like study startup specialist, I think I'm all right driving for Uber. For real. For real. Because I know how those people are paid and what the work that it entails versus what they're paid. I don't think they're paid well for the work that they have to put in, which is unfortunate.
I don't think that's true of every employer, but yeah, I would say
I could be a coordinator again though for like the right site. Mm-hmm. Just work for someone. Worst case, I would prefer coordinator over CRA at this point.
I agree. I would go back to being a coordinator for sure.
And I think that's better than Uber driver to coordinate.
Is the travel the main reason?
Travel's one of them, but it's the workload, man. If you're at the right site, you have like, maybe I'm just blinded by the site I created, but I know others that do the same. Like, you got flexibility. You want tomorrow off? Fine. Like, okay. You take the whole week off if you want. Flexibility, the freedom within, like if the management's cool, like they're going to give you opportunities too that you could add to your resume. I think you don't see that at the CROs and even at the small CROs. It's just more work, or like you can climb the corporate ladder. Like, hey, if you do really good, you could be a CTM one day. It's like, yeah, I kind of know where, how this movie ends. For me personally, that's not what would give me fulfillment.
So what about this, guys? I'm going to ask both of you this one. So we talked about gaps in resumes. Mm-hmm. What about taking a step backwards? So
yeah,
you know, you're director level, and now, you know, because you need a job, you go to a CTM or PM position. How does that look in the eyes of an employer? Sponsor/CRO. What do you guys think on that?
Good. I think a lot of the employers know how stressful these roles are. And if you present it during the interview, like, hey, I had a lot of pressure. I dealt with high pressure situations. It started taking a toll on my health or whatever it was, emotional health. I took a step back and I found work-life balance. I'd be okay with that.
I don't know, Dan. That sounds like a lot of, like,
yeah, I don't know if I'd accept that either.
If they're they don't accept that, I'm glad. Look, I don't want that job.
Dan, it sounds good. It sounds really good. Like, it sounds phenomenal. But you know, I'm just saying, like, you know, the reality is, like, wait a minute. Like, clinical research is stressful. Clinical research is inherently messy. So I just have a candidate now telling me that, you know, the heat in the kitchen was too hot and I had to get out. Is that really somebody you're going to bring on your team, Dan?
Depends, I mean, if on you what really role think I'm hiring. About it,
well, any role.
Well,
I mean, at the coordinator, yeah, because I know how the CROs and sponsors are, and I know we're not like that.
Yeah.
So I would be okay with that too, and that would come with a massive pay cut.
Yeah.
And I would explain that to them if they're okay with it. They say, yeah, you know, I just really want to, like, I don't like those deadlines and the travel and all this. Like, I just want to be a coordinator again. Cool. Let's try it out for 3 months.
I think it depends on the role. So I agree with Dan going from, say, a CRA to a CRC. I'd have no issues with that because I get it. There's a lot more pressures as a CRA and a CRC. You're not traveling. And if they just told me, hey, I just couldn't do the traveling anymore, I'd be like, yeah, cool. I understand. That's great. You have experience. I'd love to onboard you here as a CRC.
Sure.
But if you're kind of, you know, just stepping down slightly from the two roles you initially were discussing.
You're saying like a similar role.
Yeah, I would take that as a cop-out and just like, oh, you just couldn't do it. You just couldn't handle it, right?
You couldn't hang. Maybe that's not the job for you.
You need to go elsewhere, right? Go step down way further because there's not a whole lot of difference.
If that
was
true, though, if that's truly how you felt as a candidate, why would you try to find a better answer and just get screwed over later? Like, you should probably be honest in the interview.
Well, then maybe you should be honest to yourself and step down a little further.
Exactly.
but also, let's not say that let's not say it's because of truly, like, I couldn't, you know, what if it's not up to the candidate, right? For example, if I were to, you know, step down from my position, you know, and I were to, you know, then you try to replace that same position or go forward in the career trajectory. What if you're left with no choice but to accept a position that's, in a sense, viewed as a step backwards, but it's not because I couldn't handle or succeed in that situation. I was kind of, the company went, I don't know, company just fell off.
Yeah. I mean, for the job that you're going to get, that you're stepping down, that's an easy explanation. Like, hey, this is an opportunity for you to hire me at way below market value. The problem is the next job, because the next job doesn't care about two jobs ago. You know, they care about your last job. So it's like, it's setting you back further than you think by doing that. But if there's no other choice, like, what are you going to do? You have to, in my opinion, especially if you're like the sole income winner of your family or you're dependent on a dual income household. I mean, you got to do it. There's no, you know, you need right now. You're not worried about 3 years from now what another employer is going to say.
True.
These are like tough things people got to navigate through. And I guess it's very relevant to some people right now. I mean, we don't see it as much at the site because we're in our own little planet. But from what I'm hearing from my colleagues like you and others, the CRO and sponsor life right now, like employment life, is not all sweet things are tough right now, and I can respect that. I think, look, sites are a welcoming place. I think if you make a step back, like if you were to do that, it might be easier to explain later why you went back to the site than to say, oh, I took a role like two steps down. Like if you were a CTM, instead of going CTM to like what, project manager, you go to coordinator again, like maybe lead CRC, and then go back to being a CTM 3 years later. I think that's an easier convincing you have to do. Like, hey, I just wanted to be at the site again. You know, I had too much CRO. I wanted to get my hands dirty at the site level again, and now I'm even better prepared to be a CTM than I was before.
Yeah.
I think that's better, but that comes with a bigger pay cut too.
Yeah.
Although surprisingly not that much bigger anymore. I think the sites are starting to pay closer to what CROs and sponsors are.
Yeah, because they want to retain that good talent. For sure.
I was just talking about this with my friend Judy today, Judy Galindo, and what we're paying some of our coordinators, like even in Yuma. I thought it was way far off from what some CROs are paying their startup specialists, their remote. It's not that far off.
Yeah.
We're in Yuma.
CRA, yeah.
And we're in Yuma. If we were in a bigger city, it would be even more. So that delta would be closer to the alternatives.
That's actually great to hear. It's about time. It's well
overdue. It is about time. Yeah. And I think sites, despite all the people complaining and sometimes SOS, you know, we make jokes and stuff. I think sites are paid fair. I mean, if you know what you're doing when you're negotiating a budget, you're getting paid way more than fair. And there's a lot of complaining going on. And sometimes I've been a part of it, just making memes to be funny. But at the end of the day, if you know what you're doing, if you have someone like Chris negotiating your budgets, or if you're experienced, you're doing well as a site. If you're doing your job and enrolling and randomizing patients, you have more than enough to pay your staff fairly. Period. Even screen fail or no screen fail and late payments or not, you still have funding to pay your staff fairly, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of site owners would disagree with you, but I don't, Dan.
I know they would, but I would question, like, let's open your books for an audit and see where this money's going. Like, you can't tell me what I'm seeing in front of my own eyes, and it's not like we're being frugal. We're spending money on fucking videographer every month to interview, like, restaurant owners. Like, we have budgets for that and still a budget to pay healthy profits to all the owners and more than a fair salary to our staff. So I don't know where, like, everyone that's complaining, like, where it's at. I don't see the disconnect, honestly.
Yeah.
But we do have, I mean, there are higher rent markets, I guess. Like Miami, LA, if you're paying like a lot of rent, I guess I could see that. But we're also like overexpanded on the space that we need. We hire more than we need and we rent more space than we actually need to grow into it. And we still have profits. And we're not doing like incredibly well, like study wise. I mean, we have like three studies we can enroll for right now. It's not like a mega site.
Right.
And there's still profits and everyone's happy. So I don't know. I mean, the site's point of all this, the site is not a bad place to be.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I really do. I just, you know, I think back to the circular topic that started this discussion, it's, you know, how does that look when you want to transition back to where you came from, you know? And it's just not always an easy sell. And I really, really believe that recruiters, hiring managers need to look past whether it's a regression or whether it's a gap. Don't put so much emphasis on it and gloss over a very well-qualified candidate otherwise. I think that's just the take-home message. I really think that needs to be explored and discussed more, just given this unprecedented job market, I mean, that people are experiencing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. I mean, Dan, honestly, I think Yuma Clinical Trials would, you know, in a different time, you know, fast forward 5 years from now or rewind 5 years from now when Yuma Clinical Trials wasn't in existence, you would probably have 10 to 20 trials going on right now.
Yeah.
You know, whereas right now, because of capital markets and VC funding and private equity, and, you know, there's some very swift and unique ways that we're seeing some of our colleagues raise money, you know, like crowdfunding and crowdsourcing, which is, I mean, it's
never been
seen. Never been done, but it's worked, right? So I'm saying it's unprecedented times.
After laughter comes tears. I think that's a Wu-Tang song.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's been we were all drunk off of the post-COVID high. Hire everybody. Yeah, come on. We can't hire enough people. To now it's like, hey, we're being super picky. We're going to analyze the length of your gap. We're going to debate whether a gap's even okay. Like, we've just come in like 2 years. We've come a long way. Yeah. Whereas sites are basically consistent still. Like, I mean, we were hiring back then. We're hiring now. But we never went in a hiring frenzy. We never got in over our head. We hired slightly more than we need to, but we grew into it. I think I have more control as an entrepreneur. This is why I like being a business owner. I have my hands on all the levers. Whereas if I work for someone else, I only have a few levers, right? If someone else has other levers, I can't control them all. And that's, I don't necessarily like that. Luke Taylor, what allows a candidate to stand out in this job market, and what is the likelihood of a company taking a chance on you at this point in time, early in your career? Let me see. Luke Taylor, let me look you up real quick. We'll give you a personalized answer. Clinical research assistant. Oh, here we go. Just connected with you, Luke. Clinical research assistant. He is currently a clinical research assistant at a trial management associates. So it sounds like a SMO. Only since October. That's good. That's like Lana and the staff I have. Prior to that, a manager at GNC nutrition store. So a manager. And then education, University of North Carolina, Wilmington. About to graduate. Not even graduated yet, in May 2025. So here's someone. Perfect. I think you're in the perfect situation to ride out this storm. You're at a site. You're a research assistant, you're about to be a coordinator, about to get your bachelor's degree. So for the next uptick in the job market, one of the things I always tell myself, Robert, this is like a lesson. I'm not a religious person at all. One of my favorite verses from the Bible is, "This too shall pass." It's so profound, man. Like when you're in euphoria or when you're in the lowest depths, this too shall pass. Like, it's not going to be like this forever.
It's true.
Right? So Luke, you're in the perfect place, man, as a site. And this market will change. It's going to eventually get back to CROs or sponsors. I don't know if it's going to be CROs, but sponsors hiring again like crazy. Big site networks maybe becoming like the next version of a CRO, hiring like crazy. There's just not enough people to staff the studies that the industry is trying to crank out. And there's a lot of innovation in this space too. And if you believe in AI and what that's supposed to do, it's supposed to catalyze drug discovery at the early stage level. So theoretically you should have more studies. Yeah. So Luke, you're in the perfect place, man. I think you already stand out just by watching this stuff, just by being on LinkedIn at that young of an age. Most people don't get on LinkedIn until they're like in their late 20s. So if you're early 20s and you're on LinkedIn, you're good. You're already standing out, man. I don't think you need to do anything.
Great answer. I mean, I agree with you. But depending on what Luke's ambitions are to stand out in this job market as he currently stands, I think, Dan, to your point, Dan, it's kind of weathering the storm is the best advice, because I don't know if there is a whole bunch somebody could do given the talent pool that's already out there, above and beyond what you already said. So I think, there's probably a low likelihood, and I'm not sure what Luke means by company. So maybe he could comment again to tell us more. So like, does he mean sponsor? Does he mean CRO? Does he mean vendor? Does he mean another SMO? Like what does he mean by company that would be willing to take a chance early in the career? I think there needs to be some more definition.
Yeah, give us more color.
More
it sounds like you're in a good place, unless that place, you know, that site is going through layout. I mean, there are some site networks that got in over their heads, especially the ones using DCT tools that overextended themselves. We see a lot of corrections happening right now from overextension. DCT, you don't really hear about that anymore. I mean, the tech that was part of DCT that was meant to be here is here. And we just call it different things. We call it e-consent. We call it e-pro. I mean, DCT as like a business model is kind of over, I think. My opinion, guys. I'm sure others disagree. Chris, what was that call all about, man?
It was a client.
Someone wants to hire more people? Was it a client?
No, it was a client that had concerns with, or not concerns, wanted to discuss their budget.
Ah, so they're getting more studies?
35%.
35. Do they have enough to pay their coordinators well?
Yes, I would assume so.
Okay. So, see, sites are catching up as far as... And if sites become site networks, which a lot are, that might replace some of the CRO work that they had in the past. So this too shall pass, my favorite Bible verse. If you're in the middle of a layoff, just keep that in mind. Like, doesn't stay like this forever. We don't really have a good answer for the resume gaps. I don't mind it as an employer. All three of us have said the same. I may not even mind you being an entrepreneur. Not everyone feels that way, but I don't know. I'm trying to give some clarity to people.
Yeah, I'd love for somebody who's in the situation right now to like jump in on this conversation. So if you're watching this, and obviously with, you know, Dan's cool with it, which he typically is, and you want to jump on this live with us, Dan will send you the link, you know, and come on and give us your perspective, because it's not, you know, we can sit here, the three of us, and talk about it and how we feel about it and what we would do if we were in it. But it's very different talking to somebody who's like, look, I've been unemployed for 11 months. I've sent out over 1,000 applications. I've gotten through 3 rounds of interviews, but never made it to the finish line. That's a very, you know, I would love to talk to somebody like that, because LinkedIn is, there's no shortage of those types of topics or posts, you know, so that's a completely different perspective. And, you know, being able to hear it from the horse's mouth to a degree is really different, really more meaningful, at least in my opinion. I mean, you know, we can all sit here and give our opinions, but they're just opinions at the end of the day.
Well, there is one item that's not an opinion, right? Supply and demand. So the tougher the times, right, the larger supply of employees, an employer can be more selective, right?
Yeah.
And the reverse is true. If unemployment rate is very low and there's a lot of job openings, an employer can only be so selective, right? So, yeah, you're going to take the perfect candidate in a time when it's difficult to get a job, right? As an employer,
more competitive, more competitive, which means your networking has to be better, which mm-hmm. means all those things that you thought were luxuries in the past are mandatory now, as far as getting on LinkedIn, getting to know people, just like Luke is doing here on this LinkedIn. And they're also like, tough times create opportunities, and it's going on in every industry. Chris and I jumping on another podcast in an hour about real estate. Like, a lot of realtors are going to be out of job soon. And
like commission, I heard about that.
Yeah, with the commission. So, yeah. Yep.
Speaking
interesting, of which, interesting times.
I'm jumping off of this call in 9 minutes, whether we're done or not. So, Dan, be back in 9 minutes.
Yeah, I got to run to myself.
So,
I got a good opportunity for Robert, though. It just goes to show you, like, The calls still come in. They're just, they're unorthodox. Like, you have to be, well, maybe that's a good thing to leave with. You have to be willing to be unorthodox. Like, there's, Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan till they get punched in the mouth. Well, if you find yourself getting punched in the mouth right now, you got to change your plan. If your plan was, hey, I'm going to be CRA, lead CRA, CTM, and you just got laid off, you got to change your plan a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be unorthodox. And I guess that's the whole point of this live stream here.
Switch your stance, right? Change your stance. Get ready to pivot, you know? Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
If everything was predictable, they could already use AI to replace all of us. The thing that gives you your opportunity is that the market is not predictable. It's anything but. And so that's why you are always going to be in demand if you know how to pivot accordingly. But I got to share this opportunity with Robert, because the opportunity is still here, guys and gals. It's just, you got to find it different ways now. Like, subscribe, comment, share, and nobody's going to do it for you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.